He's all I had.
Gina told him.
He's all I had. All I had. He's my life. Without him, there's no me. I can't live without that man. I don't want to.
Yes, you can, Gina. You have to live. You have to be strong. Why you think Mike Adia loved you so much?
'Cause you're so strong.
He loved you. Gina, you meant the world to that boy. It was just his time, Montel added, as tears filled up his eyes and slowly melted down his cheeks.
No, 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 it wasn't.
Yes, it was, baby girl. And you will pull through this.
I can't leave him here. They might not treat him right.
They gonna do their jobs, Gina. Kadir is in good hands. Nothing can ever hurt him again. Do you know if he could look down and see you right now and see how you're acting? He'd be hurt to see you like this.
Doc, please let me stay with him tonight. I can't leave him. I got to stay with him. He's so cold. He needs a blanket. Can they get him a blanket?
Gina, the boy don't need no blanket. Girl, you scaring me. Now you got to pull yourself together.
Doc, why did they take him from me?
She sobbed.
Why did God take my baby from me? Oh, God, why?
Montel tightened his hold on Gina so she wouldn't fall to the floor. She leaned over the bed and hugged Kadir's lifeless body and kissed his cheek one last time.
I'll always be with you,
she whispered in his ear. Then, and only then, did she let Kadir's father lead her from the room. He passed his eyes one last time over his dead son and continued walking, holding the grieving woman, remembering that there was another waiting, Kadir's mother. Montel took Gina home and stayed with her. When she awoke, Gagit was sitting in a chair by the bed and Gucci was laying on Kadir's pillow.
You okay, baby?
Where am I?
The scene was like Dorothy and Toto, and it was all a bad dream.
You're home. We brought you home last night.
Who are you?
I'm your grandmother, child. What, you done lost your rabbit-ass mind?
Gina's mind had to rewind itself. She wasn't in the projects. She was at her house, and that wasn't Gagget sitting there.
Who are you?
Gina asked the girl, not having a clue as to who this stranger was sitting before her.
I'm Nita, Jalil's second wife.
The girl spoke as if being someone's second wife was some normal shit. Nita was so peaceful, though, and so soft-spoken. She was humble, even in her jewels, and looked like a queen. She was fully garbed, with a beautiful kamar covering her head.
Where's Doc?
She asked.
He's probably at the hospital with the funeral directors and members of the masjid. They're making the funeral arrangements for Kadir.
I got to go there,
Gina said, trying to get out of bed.
You can't go. There is no one who can go there. Here, honey, just try to relax. I made some tea. Here, drink some. It'll make you feel better.
There isn't a goddamn thing that'll make me feel better,
thought Gina. She swallowed the prescribed sedative Nita handed her, which happened to be the first of many. Nita was a wise woman. Only sleep could fix some things. She knew Gina was only 19, and this kind of trauma could damage her if it wasn't handled right.
Poor thing,
Nita thought, as she stroked Gina's forehead. She stayed by Gina's side until the funeral. It was the hardest day of Gina's life. She hadn't been outside or seen anyone other than Nita since Kwa had been killed. The funeral was packed. Rick called Gina from the hospital room he laid in. He cried for her and Kadir, but most of all, for Lita. Gina had never heard a man cry, not even Kadir. She didn't know what to say. She didn't know what to do. She felt his pain, and she began crying with him, especially when he talked of Lita. She died that night. She got shot in the neck, and Rick never saw her go down or nothing. He wasn't by her side, and he never told her goodbye. Gina could not see the splendor that the funeral director had arranged for the people who loved Kadir Richards. She only knew her legs wouldn't hold her up. She felt her belly sink some more, and an aching pain twist at her insides as thoughts of him darted through her mind.
"He looks so fine," someone remarked.
"No,"
she thought.
"He looks dead."
"The flowers are so beautiful," someone else replied.
"The flowers smell like death,"
she thought. Someone was pulling at her, murmuring to her, "Gina, Gina, come on, baby, sit down. You're going to hurt yourself. Please, come on." She heard the person pulling at her tell people, "Please, please, she can't handle it. Never mind the condolences. She can't hear you." All Gina could hear was someone crying, so loud, and it hurt so bad. Her body could no longer hold her up, and she dropped in front of his casket to the floor.
"Something's holding me. I can't feel nothing. But I'm standing. How'd they do that?"
Then she forgot a lot for a time. And then she was outside, still standing, but not alone. It was pretty outside.
"We're in the park. Look, there's birds. What's that noise?"
The whirring sound of the casket being lowered into the ground registered and brought Gina out of her mental closet for a moment. Into that black hole went all of Gina's hopes, her babies, her life, her one true love. The only man who really loved her. And as his casket sunk deeper and deeper into the ground, her body sank into her grandmother's arms. Gagit knew her baby would never be the same. The weeks passed, and Gina never once went outside. The day Rick was released from the hospital, he went to see her and stayed in the guest room. Together, they took care of each other and listened to one another's stories about the good old days. Rick knew Gina was not the same. He wished she would come out of her darkness. He tried everything from jokes to reminiscing about his own memories with Kadir, but nothing seemed to work. And then, someone knocked at the back door. "You expecting somebody, Gina?"
"No."
Rick opened the back door, to find Kadir's mother standing in the freezing cold.
"Hi,"
she said.
"Hi,"
said Denise. "How you feeling, Gina?" asked Viola, walking through the house into the living room. No one was allowed in.
"I'm feeling better,"
said Gina.
"Can I get you something?"
"I'm not on a social call."
"Oh, well, what's up?"
asked Gina, wondering what the fuck she was there for. Viola didn't beat around the bush with idle talk about the weather. She got right to the point, and she broke that shit down without blinking an eye. "Listen, Kadir was my son, and I loved him dearly. However, he is gone now, and life must go on." She reached in her pocketbook and pulled out a sheaf of paperwork, which she shoved in Gina's face. "As you can see, this house is in my name. I own this house, dear, and I have plans for this property." Gina couldn't believe what she was seeing. Not just the deed to the house. She had paperwork on the Range Rover and the BMW. "Everything," said Viola Richards. "Not Montel, not Montel and Viola, just Viola." The only thing that wasn't in this bitch's name was Gina's furniture, the jewelry, and the Benz. That was it. Gina just sat there looking at the bitch. Rick stepped in. "I think you should leave now. I really think it's time for you to go." Well, I will give you a week. I hope you understand. She stood up and shook it off as if she had said nothing out of the ordinary.
This has all been so difficult for me to deal with.
No one had noticed Gina coming alive.
Difficult for you.
It hasn't been that difficult for you to sink your claws into all of Quadir's shit.
These assets are in my name. Therefore, that makes them mine.
And what exactly, now that Qua is dead, is yours?
The house, the furnishings, the cars, and the jewelry. I want it all back.
Oh, no, bitch. That's where you fucked up. The Mercedes-Benz is in my name. Would you like to see my paperwork? And the furnishings I bought.
By now, she was towering over the woman.
Would you like to see my receipts? And the jewelry is mine, too. Everything in this house is mine. All you gonna get is the walls.
The teenage widow stood there, waiting, wondering why grown-ups could be so mean. Denise came to her mother's aid.
Who you think you talking to?
Gina slipped into superior gear.
Whom do you think? Let me tell you something. When your son came in this house and needed something, the motherfucker came to me. When he had a problem, he told it to me. I am the one that gave Quadir what he needed. Anything he needed. He came to me.
She was into it now. Her eyes were boring into the cold-hearted woman and her violin-string, tight-ass chicken-hawk daughter.
That man, my man, has only been in the ground for 2 weeks, and you already here trying to collect his shit.
My brother would have wanted us to have his things. That's why he put it in our mom's name.
Bitch, please. He put it in your mom's name, Denise, because he was a drug dealer. Shit don't mean he wanted her to have a motherfucking thing. Did the motherfucker ever invite you over? Hell no. What's this, your third visit? I know it, you know it, and you know who your son bought this house for. He bought it for me. You remember that when you turned the key and unlocked the door to this house, you miserable bitch. And you never liked me. So I'm not surprised that you got the fucking audacity to come into my motherfucking house and tell me some bullshit like this.
Who you calling a bitch?
Asked Denise.
You heard me. I didn't stutter. Your mother is a miserable bitch that goes around trying to make everybody else miserable. Shit, she can't even hold her man. You want me out? Fuck you. Shit, both y'all can kiss my ass. I hope you burn in hell.
Rick was up. He'd been letting Gina get everything off her chest. Proud as a peacock, and just as happy to see her again among the living. But enough was enough.
I think you two should go. You really have no place here. Neither of you do. And what you're doing is wrong. Qua wouldn't have wanted nothing like this. He wouldn't have wanted this to go on.
He stood his ground against the chicken hawks.
They don't care about Qua, dear. How could they? How could she? That bitch didn't even raise him, Rick. His grandmother did. And his sister never even knew him, coming in here telling me about my goddamn man. Motherfuck you and his motherfucking house.
You curse all you want. You can say whatever you want. You just get your lowlife ass out of my house.
Fuck you, bitch.
Said Gina, as she spit at Viola, missing her by a blow of the wind as Viola opened the door.
Hey, Gina. Don't let me see you in the street, bitch, because your ass is mine, said Denise.
Bitch, we can go round for round right here, right now. Let me go, Rick,
said Gina, ready to fuck both they asses up. G was hyped. She was ready to be world champion.
Gina, chill the fuck out,
Rick yelled. He ushered the chicken hawks out of the door and closed behind them. They must have caught a cab to the house or had someone drop them off, because they damn sure were taking the Rover and the BMW with them. Gina wanted to stop them, but what the fuck for? She wanted to kill the bitches, but it wasn't worth it.
The bitch can have it, Rick. She can have it all. Shit. The insurance is up on the BMW anyway. I should blow it up.
Looking around, she felt her belly sinking again.
but only for a second.
What am I gonna do, Rick?
Call a storage company, pay them to come and pack your shit up and store it for you. Then you're gonna figure out where you're gonna stay, and you're gonna move. If you want a house, I'll get you one. Or you can come and stay with me.
No, Rick. I'm okay.
She finally sat down.
I want to go home.
For the first time in her life, she wanted to go home to God Gets House. You got money?
Yeah, there should be some here. Come on.
She led him downstairs to the safe and unlocked it.
Damn, there should be more. There's only $2,000 here.
$2,000? Where the fuck is the dough at? Asked Rick. They sat silent for a moment, Gina wondering what dough.
There should be way more than that in the safe. Quas said he had millions.
Millions? Gina asked. Yeah, baby. True motherfucking blue millions.
Millions?
Gina asked again. Gina, don't get that shit twisted. Kadir made it clear to me that he was a millionaire. Now, I don't know where, but he had millions.
His mother must have had it. She had everything else.
Damn, that's fucked up. Gina, you don't have no money saved?
Yeah, a couple of thousand.
You spend thousands like it's dollars, and you have no major paper saved? Thought Rick. Gina, you holding at least a half million just in jewelry, furniture, and furs, and you have no cash? Go figure. How much do you spend a week? 10?
No, more like 15, maybe 20,000.
See? And you have 2,000. When is the Benz coming out of the shop?
I don't know. He should have been ready.
I don't know what to say. And why do you want to go to your grandmother's house? She lives down Richard Allen, right? I mean, damn. If you don't want to stay with me, then at least let me get you a house or an apartment.
No, Rick, you act like you're my keeper. Quadir was my keeper. And he's gone now. I want to go home. I haven't been home since I was 17. I miss home. And I'm sorry if the projects scare you, but I grew up there. Remember?
I just can't figure out how you, Kadir's woman, is broke and going back to Ridget Island.
And Rick, what part of that do you not understand?
I don't understand why you want to go back to the projects. Motherfuckers want to get out, and you trying to go back.
I want to go home. Don't you understand? The projects isn't my home. My home is where my family is. They're the ones that really care about me. They're the ones that will take care of me.
Rick looked at her. Gina, you're a big girl. You can take care of yourself. You don't need to be living down in no Richard Allen. Man, those niggas down there is crazy. He knew. He ran Richard Allen. Gina suppressed a smirk and looked at him, feeling normal again and liking it.
I want to go home for a while. I really need my family. I mean, this big old house is the best shelter from the cruel world, but without Qua, it just ain't the same. And now he's gone.
She said, walking over to her fireplace.
He gave me everything, Rick. He gave me a purpose. And he loved me like no one has ever loved me.
He gave me loyalty, Rick. I mean, I know he cheated on me from time to time. I could tell. But even with the bullshit, he was the most wonderful man. I don't want to really leave here, Rick. I know you don't. Look up in here. It's the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Qua said he was going to get you this house. He said his children would grow up in this house, and the two of you would live in this house together for the rest of your lives.
He really said that?
Yeah, he really did.
Isn't there anything I can do to stay here?
Whose name is on the deed?
Hers.
Then it's her house. If she wants you out, she can get you out. She can get you out through the courts.
What kind of fucking justice is this? I lose my man. I lose my goddamn house. The bitch just straight up took the Rover. Doesn't she know the goddamn store is 5 miles down the road?
I know, said Rick. That shit was cold. I would have never thought his mother would come as raunchy as she did today.
I have nothing. I'm losing everything.
She said sadly. You buy Armani underwear. Look at all this furniture. Look at it. Not to mention all the goddamn diamonds you wear. You look like someone went straight to Africa. Please, you sitting up here trumped up talking like life is over. You got more than any woman I know, Gina. Shit, you got paid. Bitches don't see a portion of what you got. You better look around. All this is yours. In another apartment or another house. What you got? 5 big screens up in here? 3 living room sets?
4.
She said, Gina. Pool table, video games, and with all the cases of Dom, you could bootleg. I'm saying. I just don't want to see you back down the projects. I know goddamn well Qua wouldn't want you down there. Stay in a hotel, then find a place. I'll pay for it.
Rick, I made up my mind. I'm going home for a while. When I'm ready, you can get me a house.
Shit. I really wish you would stop with that shit.
What is it you don't understand? You don't understand where the money is? I spent all the goddamn money, Rick. You don't know why I want to go home? Because I'm not scared of no Richard Allen. I don't understand what's so hard to understand. I don't want to live here, okay?
She was crying again.
I just wish Quadir was here, that's all. If he was here, everything would be okay. Now everything is just falling apart.
Rick had enough. What the fuck do you think I've been going through? Lita is gone. Lita is gone by the hands of some nigga named Ran. Lita isn't ever coming back. Kyrie is gone with his grandmom. I don't have my family. I don't have the only motherfucker out here that I could trust. So all them tears you done shed isn't doing neither one of us no good. And don't start crying again.
He really didn't understand her thinking. Gina was a hustler's wife. She was not supposed to be in no projects. It was too many other hustlers out there that would see her straight on the strength of Kadir.
I don't know, G. What can I tell you, sister, but to find that money? Before you leave this house, you find that money, because there's money to be found. Millions, Gina, millions. You should be looking for it now.
Do you really think there's millions in here?
She stopped crying.
I know there is. Qua got to have it in the safe.
There was only a couple of thousand in the safe.
Then that ain't the one, baby. Trust me, there's got to be another one. Qua had his shit stacked. Why else you think he would give up a yield of $50,000, sometimes $80,000 a week? Kadir had his own thing set up, Gina, with plenty of brothers on the payroll. Kadir had all the money. The money is up in here.
There is no money in here, Rick.
Yes, there is. You just don't know about it.
Rick, I live here, okay? I know every nook and cranny in this house. Trust me. There are no millions in this house, okay? If there was, I would know it. Every week, Quadir would put money in his safe. That was it. That's where he went to get his money. I wasn't allowed to go near the safe until he told me the combination. And that wasn't until after that bitch Sherelle called my house. There is no money. Quadir did not have no millions. His father was over here the other night, and he told Quadir he had to go on a budget.
Then his pops didn't know about the money, Gina. Kadir was like that. I'm telling you, you can believe me or not. Kadir said he had millions, and when he said millions, he meant millions. Gina, it's like hitting lotto. Never having to worry about making ends meet. Never having to worry about how you're going to eat. Never having to worry about how you're going to get what you want. Millions. Kadir said he had saved millions and was retiring from the drug game. Now, you can believe me or you don't have to, but I'm telling you now, the boy had money coming out of his ass and he didn't take it with him, baby. I think we should search the house.
You want to search the house?
Yeah, I do.
Then you go ahead, because I ain't searching shit. Ain't no money in here, Rick.
She said, walking away from him frustrated. He started with the walls, looking for trap doors, hollow sounds as he went around knocking. He knew he'd have had them if he had this big house. He looked behind pictures, tapped on the walls, searched all over the basement. Anywhere one could store a hidden safe. After a good 45 minutes of searching, Rick concluded that the money wasn't in the house.
I told you.
Gina went into the kitchen and poured some milk for Gucci.
Even the cat is paid, Rick said, shaking his head. Diamond and gold Gucci tag, and you don't have no idea where the money is.
Rick, I don't think Qua told you the truth, because there will be no need for us to go on a budget.
Gina, where is the money? You spend $20,000 a week. Come on. He wasn't serving the city kilos no more to be giving you money like that. That's why he wanted you on a budget. Just you.
Well, it looks like I'm on a budget now, since you didn't find all of these millions.
Gina said. Either that, or my pockets is getting ready to hurt me.
You gonna let me hold Lita's Cadillac?
She asked with a smile. Yeah, if you want it, he said, not feeling right about someone else driving Lita's car.
Yeah, I do.
Well, you want to go get it?
That would mean I would have to go outside,
she said.
Yeah, you'd be going outside to get the car.
Okay, let me get dressed.
Gina went upstairs and threw on a pair of jeans and some riding boots and a leather jacket. Rick drove straight to the apartment and parked next to Lita's car and gave Gina the keys.
You know, I really miss Lita,
Gina said. That girl meant the world to me, man. You don't know how bad I feel. I lost her. That girl was my friend besides being my woman.
I felt bad when I didn't go to her funeral.
Hey, G, after what you went through at Kadir's funeral, I knew you was in the zone. But one thing's for sure. Viola Richards brought you back with the dumbass shit, didn't she?
Rick nudged him with a laugh.
Kadir was my heart, Rick. He was the only thing that mattered to me. You know?
Yeah, I know. Just remember that Q is up there, G. He's watching everything you do and expects you to move on. In time, you will. But it's nice to know that there's somebody up there watching over you, somebody protecting you. And that is what Kwa's doing. He's got his wings, and right about now, they're shielding you. So do the right thing, Gina, and don't sweat that house. You came out on top, baby. Fuck the money. Fuck the house. Fuck the cars. You still a winner. Shit. You was shooting for the moon with the nigga, and now you're among the stars, baby. Just remember that.
Rick handed her the keys to Lita's car.
Drive safe.
I will.
Gina kissed Rick on the cheek and got out of the car.
Gina, don't sweat no paper out here. Call me, understand?
Okay, I will, Rick. I will.
She drove Lita's car to Gargett's and told her grandmother that she wanted the room upstairs and that she would pay to have all the junk that was piled in there put in storage. Gargett understood why Gina wanted to come home, especially after she told her about Kadir's mother coming there and telling her to get her ass out in a week. Her poor baby was losing everything, and Gargett was scared that Gina wouldn't be able to handle all of this. Downtown in the federal building, agents Field and Burson sat with U.S. Attorney Paul Parachetti.
He's willing to testify, sir, but we need to place him in the witness protection program. Without him, we have nothing, said Agent Burson. If we want these assholes, we need his testimony. The death penalty is riding on this testimony, sir, said Agent Fields.
Parachetti sat back, listening to everything they were outlining for him. The men waited in silence as the man considered and finally agreed.
Our witness protection program in North Dakota would serve best. Its rehabilitation facility is superior, and he'll have access to therapeutic modalities to get him back on his feet, so to speak. What about the wife and kids?
They'll want to be with him, said Burson.
Fine. Well, then, we've got it all straight. The witness will be transported to North Dakota.
The field agents breathed their sighs of relief as the U.S. attorney continued.
We'll want to keep this low-key. You got that? You'll bring him in by helicopter from the hospital. Collect his family now and take them all down together.
He continued to give his instructions and opinions as he made arrangements on the phone. It wasn't difficult for 40. The agents were glad he decided to cooperate. Actually, they were overly delighted. They had the leader of the junior mafia behind bars.
They had a live witness. Sure, they were going to put him in protective custody, but that was their job. To them, Forty was only worth his testimony, and past that, was nothing but a drug dealer in a wheelchair. Forty was distressed about the entire situation. Sharon was in tears, having to choose between her life in Philadelphia with her family and her world. She thought long and hard about it. She loved her man, and now that he was paralyzed and in a wheelchair, she couldn't turn her back on him. Besides, her sons needed their dad. All in all, it had been a difficult call. For Forty, it was hard to walk away from the life he had lived for so long. After all, he was leaving friends and family, not to mention having to adapt to life in a wheelchair. Forty couldn't help but to sit back and ask himself, what was it all for?
Memories. Gina had taken care of everything before she moved. She forwarded the mail to a post office box. She paid a company to box and store her furnishings and clothes. Rick had given her $20,000, and she put the majority of it away. What she didn't put up, she used to fix up Gaget's project housing unit. She got exterminators and even painters. Light blue carpet was delivered the same day the handyman in the neighborhood laid down a new kitchen floor. She put the navy blue leather furniture from her family room in Gaget's living room, along with a big screen TV and wall unit. She went to a furniture store and purchased a new bedroom and dining room set for her grandmother. The nosy neighbors knew something was going on. Before it was all over, Gina had a tiny chandelier in the dining room. Gaget was overwhelmed. Every time she opened the door, she tried to figure out whose house she was stepping into. She never thought her little project housing could look like it did. Gina took Gucci upstairs and went in her room and closed the door. She couldn't sleep. She hadn't been able to sleep since Kadir's passing. The entire situation was so overwhelming for her. She laid in bed thinking about him as she cradled Gucci. There was a lot of noise outside, and she couldn't help but to peek out the window. The brothers were on the corner shooting dice.
How can they see in the dark?
Gina wondered. A huge 4x4 pulled up and sounded like it robbed a discotheque. The music was so loud and the bass rumbled so hard, it shook Gina's bedroom windows. Then she saw a skinny girl in a blue sweater and gray skirt with a pair of pink socks and red slippers come walking up the street. She didn't have a coat on, let alone a bra. She went over to a guy who was on the corner, and Gina watched the exchange. The girl turned and proceeded to walk back down the block.
I miss you, baby. I wish you could come back. I wish you were here.
Gina felt tears well up and trickle down her face.
Why did you leave me this way, Qua? God, you don't know what you took from me when you took him.
She couldn't stop the tears or the pain.
Why is it so hard to let go?
She let her head drop to her lap and let the tears fall, hoping that each teardrop would take a drop of pain with it. It was 3:47 a.m., exactly when Gina heard people hollering outside. She peeked her head above her headboard and looked out the window to see a man and a woman fighting in the middle of the street.
Don't make no sense, Gaget said. Them fools is probably out there fighting over who drunk the last of the CNC. It's a damn shame. I don't know how they've stayed together. She is forever kicking his ass.
For real, Gaget?
Yeah. The police will be here by time it's over. Child, this is every weekend.
For real?
Honey, this is all the time. Now go on back to sleep.
She said, as she shut Gina's door and went back in her room. The next morning, a knock at the door distracted Gaget from her tirade, and she greeted a girl who lived down the street, a smiling, skinny girl with a fat baby in her arms.
Miss Scott, can you help me?
She asked, looking hopeful at Gaget.
I have a test in English class today, and I was wondering, could you watch Ayana for me?
Oh, Lord, child, I guess so. Where's your mama?
The girl looked away for a split second.
She's getting high again, and she said no,
Well, you know I'll help you out.
Miss Scott, the house looks real nice, Brenda said, looking all around.
Well, thank you. You know Gina?
No, ma'am.
That's my oldest grandbaby. She's Bria and Brianna's first cousin.
Hi, Brenda said. Gina acknowledged her with a look, but she didn't speak to the girl.
Well, here goes her baby bag and everything you'll need.
Gina felt sorry for her. She didn't look no more than 16.
I gotta go. I'll see you around dinner time.
Gina said, kissing her grandmother on the cheek.
Goodbye. You be careful, said Gaget.
I will,
hollered Gina as she brushed against Brenda on her way out the door. Brenda handed Gaget the baby.
I'll be right back after school.
Okay, she'll be fine.
Gina stepped and hopped in a cab to the body shop where the car was being fixed. While she sat in the lobby of the Mercedes-Benz dealership, she started scribbling to Kadir.
I reminisce. I reminisce for you. I reminisce the days I tried to forget, but the feelings never go away. I reminisce for you. I reminisce the nights, for the things we did and how it was so right. I reminisce for the love that was always there. I reminisce, and I know in my heart that you really did care. Even though my mind plays tricks on me, and I can't seem to let you go, I believe it's because you're still loving me. I reminisce, and the memories tell me so.
Gina got in her car and drove straight to the bank. She was seated in a room with a table where she opened her bag and carefully began to deposit her jewelry. The 10-carat diamond engagement ring, the cluster diamond ring, the charm bracelet, the diamond initial G that Rick and Lita had given to her, two Rolexes, one Abel, one Omega, one Cartier, all of which were diamond bezel, two gold Gucci watches, and one stainless steel and 18-carat Movado. The girl knew what time it was. She kept her plain gold Rolex. Of the five tennis bracelets she owned, she put four in the box and kept only one. She put her 2-carat diamond earrings in the box and kept her quarter carats in her earlobes. Then she placed 15 pairs of gold earrings in the box, keeping only 3 pairs, which she put back in her pocket. She deposited strands of gold chains, diamond pendants, diamond pins, bird pins she never wore, and a total of 17 gold and diamond bangles. They all went in the box except for 2, which she put on her other hand, letting the smallest 6-carat tennis bracelet lay over the Rolex instead of the 12. Once she was done placing all her things neatly in a safety deposit box, she started on Kadir's. Time had changed things. The fate that lay in the hands of another altered Gina's future as well as Kadir's. Gina was ready to lock it up, taking the safety deposit key and adding it to her own keychain, Kadir's diamond Q. By the time she got home, Bria and Brianna were fussing about homework and teachers and why Gaget didn't go up there and defend them like the other parents did for their kids.
What up?
Gina said, coming into the house.
Gaget, I got the car.
You got the car? Said Brianna. Let me see, Bria said, as if they both had never seen it before.
Oh, Gina, can we go for a ride?
Brianna asked, pushing past her to get a glimpse of Gina's 300.
Yeah, can we?
Bria whined. Bria was just too nice these days. What a change.
Later,
said Gina.
Good, we gonna be all that, they said, slapping high fives, not thinking about trying to get Gaget to curse out their teachers.
Then Gina heard a baby.
That baby's still here?
Said Gina.
Yeah, Brenda not coming back for the baby no time soon, and Gaget trying to make us take care of it,
said Brianna, eating some Georgie Woods potato chips.
Like we have in that,
Bria added.
Y'all are a trip.
Gina said, looking at the twins in disbelief.
Will somebody go get that baby? Gogget hollered. Y'all see me trying to cook.
Gina looked at the twins. They looked like they were deaf and dumb and definitely wasn't moving. So Gina went and got the baby. It was smelly and too small. Gina had no idea what to do with it.
Qua wanted me to have one of these?
She said, looking at the baby as if it were not part of the life force here on Earth.
Here.
She said, taking it to Brianna and giving it to her.
We're going for a ride later, remember?
Brianna took the baby.
Damn, she stinks. What just came out of your mouth, Brianna?
Hollered Gogget.
Nothing. Darn, I said this darn baby stinks. That's what I thought I heard you say. You need to go to church. You want to go to the 7 o'clock service? No, ma'am. Oh, then watch your devilish tongue.
Child, do get it honest, Gogget said, mashing her potatoes. The baby was still crying.
Oh, my God, what's that child's name?
Ayana, said Bria.
No, her mother.
Brenda, said Brianna.
Where could she be?
I don't know, Gogget. She has English class with me, and she wasn't there, and we didn't have no English test today, said Brianna. I don't know why you always helping people, said Bria.
You might need some help one day, Gogget reminded her.
Yeah, well, Brenda shouldn't have had no baby if she wasn't going to be able to take care of her child,
said Bria.
I know. That's Brenda's baby, not ours. She's somewhere now with a boy or something, because she sure wasn't in school today, said Brianna. I know. Gogget, we're the ones that suffer when you go out of your way to help people, said Bria.
Girl, hush your mouth,
said Gogget, trying to hear what was going on outside.
You hear that?
Bria asked. They got up and went to the window.
It must be those idiots next door, Bria said.
That baby is crying,
said Gina, looking at the helpless infant.
Go get it,
Bria said, nudging Brianna.
No, ain't my baby,
Brianna answered.
Gina, you go get it.
What I look like? I ain't never had no babies, and I never babysat no brats. You go get her.
The baby was starting to cry louder.
I wouldn't get that baby if it rolled off the couch and fell on the floor, said Bria.
Damn, that's cold,
Gina said, looking at her cousin's despicable grin.
It sure is,
said Brianna, slapping high fives with her twin. All of a sudden, Gary came running in the house with Kalir behind him.
Grams!
He saw his grandmother picking up a strange baby off the couch.
Aunt Gwendolyn done stabbed up Royce, y'all. The police is arresting her and everything.
Kalia, come here, baby, she said, handing Ayana to Brianna.
Brianna took the baby and sat it back down on the floor.
You okay, son? Gogget's grandbaby okay?
Well, what happened? She asked, holding her youngest grandson.
I don't know. She on that shit, Grams. And she out there with her hair all wild, half naked, titties hanging out, fighting the police.
Oh, Lord,
Gogget said, shaking her head. Bria and Brianna silently went out the door to get a dose of the commotion.
That girl is gonna have to learn the hard way.
Did you call Paula?
No. Zorian and Ivana was out there. They seen everything.
Gina answered the ringing phone.
It's Aunt Paula, Gogget.
Another knock at the door brought another surprise. Gary opened the door, thinking it was family. But Ms. Bradley, the social worker, was standing there smiling.
Yeah, can I help you?
Asked Gary.
Yes, I'm here for Ms. Scott.
Oh, Gogget!
Hollered Gary, slamming the door in her face.
It's some white lady.
He left Miss Bradley outside in the cold and went back in the house.
"Paula, I got to go. I'll call you right back," said Gaget as she went to the door.
"Oh, my goodness. Come on in. You sure do come at the darndest times. Children, this is Miss Bradley," she said, ushering her in. "Say hello. She's here about Aunt Gwendolyn's baby."
Everyone said hi to her and behaved like they had etiquette for once in their lives. You can tell that the white social worker lady had really caught Gaget off guard.
"Come on in, have a seat," said Gaget, sitting the lady at the dining room table.
"Can I get you something to eat or drink?"
"I'm a little thirsty, if that's not too much trouble. I see you have a house full."
"Gina, get Miss Bradley some juice, please." She excused herself for 1 minute and walked over to Gary.
"Come here," said Gaget,
calling him into the bedroom. She explained that the lady was there about the baby and how important it is that no one run in and out of the house, especially since her child was down the street, making a spectacle of herself.
"Gaget, it's cold outside."
"Boy, don't you got no long drawers?"
"No."
"Well, you better get some. Now go on and don't let nobody run in here," she said, pushing him out the bedroom. "And don't go across the street with them hoodlums either."
"They not hoodlums, Grams."
"Yes, they is. You just don't know it. Don't tell me, fool. I've been here longer than you. I know a hoodlum when I see one. And I see him across the street. Now go on."
Gaget returned to the dining room and explained baby Ayana. The social worker was very impressed with the lovely redecorating that had been done, and Gaget explained how Gina had moved in.
"But there is still plenty of room for the new arrival."
"Well, Miss Scott, you really don't have to explain. I'm sure the baby will be fine with you, and she'll be here with her family. I just wanted to tell you in person that the state has awarded you custody of Brandy Vallone Scott."
"Oh, thank you, Ms. Bradley. Thank you so much. I've been so worried about what would happen to that baby. You just don't know how happy I am. Thank you so much."
"Well, you're welcome. I knew you would be glad."
"Oh, I am. I'm going to have to thank the Lord for all these blessings. I really appreciate everything you've done for me and my family," said Gaget.
"Well, it was easy to see how much you cared and that you can give Brandy a good home. But I must be going now."
"Thank you for coming by to tell me in person," said Gaget.
"Bye,"
said all the grandkids sprawled all over the living room, watching Kadir's TV. Bria had Gucci, Ayana was asleep, and Brianna held Kalir.
"Take care,"
Miss Bradley waved to everyone in the house. Gary was standing right there by the door as she exited. He scared her half to death.
"That's my other grandson. Boy, what you standing out there in the cold for? Get your butt in the house," she said, dragging Gary inside, smiling in Miss Bradley's face, waving goodbye.
Gaget got back on the phone with Paula saying,
"Oh, Lord,"
over and over again.
"She's going to have us in church tonight," said Bria.
"I hope not," said Brianna.
"Yo, you should have seen Aunt Gwendolyn beat up that lady police officer. She kicked her ass. They had cameras and everything. She probably going to be on Cops or something."
"Nuh-uh,"
said Gina.
"For real, I think I was on TV."
"Gary, you always bugging. You not gonna be on nobody's TV, okay?"
said Bria. Gina suddenly froze at the sound that meant loss. Gunshots.
"Get down, Gaget,"
hollered Bria.
"Watch out,"
Gary said, running over to Gaget. Everybody was on the floor. A bullet shattered the living room window and hit the wall, leaving a hole.
"Lord, have mercy on us all. Please, Jesus, save me. Please, Lord, have mercy."
Gaget was preaching for real.
Pray, y'all, pray, she said.
Praying isn't gonna do shit, whispered Brianna. Sure as hell ain't, said Bria.
There were no more shots, and it was over. Outside, two men were lying in the street. Gary went running out the door. It was his boy Vic and this other kid named Freddy. Gina went running out the door too, but Gargit wouldn't let the twins outside. Baby Ayana was crying from all the commotion.
Damn, he was my boy, said Gary as he put his head down.
Gina reached for her cousin, hugging him. By now, Victor and Freddy's families were outside, losing their minds. Victor's mother just fell out in the street.
Lord, please don't take my son,
was all you could hear being said.
Gary, come on, let's go back in the house.
Gary didn't argue because he knew if he stayed out there tonight, it was going to be trouble.
You kids come on in here and settle down. Gary, you okay?
Yeah, Grams. He was my boy, though.
I know, son. It's a shame to see these young children out here killing one another and taking away good lives that God put on this here earth. I just don't know what has happened to these young peoples out here in the world. They is crazy, and they don't have no respect. Now, back when I was coming up, wasn't none of this mess going on. There was drugs and people drank, but they had sense about them. And not only that, they had respect for one another. It's a sad shame what the dang dabbit they done did to my window.
Gina walked upstairs to her room. She moved about in the dark and sat on the bed holding her kitten. Funny how they ended up the same way, in the street, covered with blood. She remembered that night her destiny changed. He winked his eye and let go of her hand, making it happen. Gina mustered up the strength and forced the tear back inside.
Wow.
She said to him with her heart.
I miss you.
And she paused for a moment, continuing on with her normal conversation. Bria walked by Gina's bedroom door and heard her in there talking to Kadir.
She really needs a new man, she thought to herself.
Gina got herself ready for bed and let Kadir sleep with her. In the middle of the night, screeching sounds of baby and distress woke up the whole house. Gina got up, but Gargit told her to go back to sleep.
I can't sleep, no way,
Gina said, getting a glass of milk.
Thinking about Kadir, baby?
All the time, Gargit.
I know, she said, rocking little Yanni in her arms. Kadir was a good man. Child, if I had a man like Kadir in my day, I'd have to dig deep to find a reason to go on without him, too. So I know how you feel. Gina, you got to be strong, honey. You got to count your blessings and thank the Lord for being so merciful. You must keep your mind strong. Kadir would want it that way.
Flashbacks illuminated the image of the gunman aiming right at her and Kadir pushing her out the way. She knew he would have done anything for her, 'cause he did everything that he could.
I'd give everything to be with him again.
I know, but when God is ready, you will be. All things come in time, Gina. All things in time. Be patient. I worry about you girls, I really do. But Gina, you had something special, baby. You must never forget Kadir. Keep him alive in your heart and in your soul. What you two had was pure and honest. Cherish that love. Keep it in your heart and let it grow with you.
The next morning, Gina got up to answer the bell and let Brenda in. Gargit took over immediately.
You know I've been waiting to curse you out, but I'm not going to.
She got up and went into her bedroom.
Why did you leave your baby here all night?
Gina asked.
I'm sorry. I went out, and I just thought I would be back before now.
Godgate came out the bedroom, and Gina left it alone. She handed Brenda her daughter.
You take your baby, and you go wherever you're going. But you think about one thing. That child didn't ask to come into this world, and she deserves a lot better from you.
You must be crazy to try some shit like this at 2432.
But you will learn.
And you, my dear, are gonna have to learn the hard way.
I'm sorry, she said.
No, you not. You not sorry, 'cause if you was, you would have done what you said you was gonna do, and that was go take an English test and come back here and get your baby. You not sorry. You knew you wasn't coming back. But guess what? You won't get me to play your fool no more,
said Gugget, as she gathered the baby's things and put them in the baby bag.
It's not that. It's just that my mother was getting high, and she put me out, and I tried to stay with my boyfriend, but his mother said I couldn't stay there.
Your mother been getting high. That don't got nothing to do with you calling. You young girls treat these babies like they something that just came out of you. Baby, they more than that. You need God. You're going down the wrong path, and I tried to help you, but you took my kindness for weakness. In life, you should never bite the hand that feeds you.
I'm sorry, Miss Scott. I really am. I appreciate you keeping her for me.
Godkid handed her the baby bag and closed the door. Relief filled her. She looked at the time, noting that her babies would be home soon. She worried about them out there in the streets on their own, especially little Kalir.
Lord, show my babies the way.
When it's all said and done. 40 had come a long way. He had progressed quite well with the help of therapy, despite the fact that he would never walk. He went every day for the past 7 months, determined to beat the odds. The FBI's witness protection program had moved him to North Dakota in the mountains to keep him safe. Now it was time to bring him home, time to testify against Jarrell Jackson. The U.S. attorney, Paul Perschetti, had an open and shut case that would defy Clarence Darrow. It was ridiculous that Jarrell Jackson, the known leader of the Junior Mafia, didn't plead guilty. No one knew why he would even want to go to trial. It was totally ludicrous. Didn't matter. Jackson was going to get the death penalty. Perschetti knew he had him by the balls, and it felt great. Jarrell deserved to die, not just for what he did out in the street, killing and serving the city cocaine, but he deserved to die for being so damn slick and never getting caught. The Junior Mafia was a fucking nuisance, all of them, and getting their leader, Jarrell Jackson, had made headlines in newspapers throughout the country for the past 6 months. Now it was time for trial. Now it would all come to an end. Once Christopher Cole testified, it would be over. Perschetti was eating up all the publicity and taking all the credit for making the streets safer